Hello.
Oh, hi.
Hey.
I think that one's officially won out now. I think that's just it.
I think so. Someday maybe we'll be peppy enough. But
I was doing some intense presidential, she says in quotations, dance moves there with my arms.
So I was at work today and we had a conference thing and they played the Time Warp from Rocky Horror Picture Show. It was really weird. It was a whole moment. But at one stage they were like, everybody get up and dance. And like four people did. And I sat there like in my chair doing a kind of chair Time Warp dance. And it was also the same kind of like badness.
I have several important thoughts about this as one who adores this movie.
Yeah.
But they are not what you might think, those thoughts. One is, what the actual were they doing playing that at a work situation? It did not involve like that you work at some sort of like fetish club. Like, the fact that you put some of the most awkward people on the planet in a room and then put Rocky Horror Picture on. Here's the Time Warp. Second of all, those four people who got up and danced, normally I would say well done to them for being brave, but I'm going to say they're probably psychopaths.
100%. I mean, I think they were. Yeah.
The worst episode of The Office I could possibly.
It was a weird moment. And I was just like, what? This is now the second weirdest place that I've heard that song. The first weirdest was when I was in a Barnes and Noble and I was walking through and they were playing kids bops. Do you remember Kids Bops?
Where I it was sure like do. I sure
children
do.
Singing songs that were normal. And it was a Kids Bops version of the Time Warp. And I stopped in my tracks and I thought to myself, who decided that children should cover this song? Like, awesome. That's just inappropriate, but also weird.
It's also Miss whatever prude. It's just a dance. But here's the deal:
where I almost yelled out today, group sex.
That happens in the movie
because they played that part where you yell out group sex. You know?
Oh yeah.
And I I was like chair dancing.
Oh, I thought you were just making a like political commentary that. Or a accurate commentary that they do, in fact, have group sex.
No, it was because it's, you know, when just to jump to the left and step to right, pelvic thrust, and then you're supposed to be like, group sex. And I was like, it was the pelvic thrust part. And I literally had to bite my lip because I was starting to say group sex at work.
But also, if I had to see any of my colleagues, if I had to see even Kevin, who's my dear friend, do a pelvic thrust in the Time Warp, I might just start screaming.
It was weird. And it was early. And I was like,
you can't play Time Warp without drinks or, you know, without some sort of even tea. It doesn't have to be. There needs to be a transition that has happened. It also needs to be in the PM.
A warning as well, instead of just being like, whoop, now we're playing Time Warp. And
I'm gonna throw this word out here, reason for why the song was being played. Y'all have very elaborate meetings, I feel like.
I can understand how they got to the decision to make this happen.
Can you? Please tell us all.
I want to strongly disagree with like five steps of decision making before they even got to the Time Warp. But like it as a like whole, no, I'm not.
You know that you're in a really bad faculty meeting when the Time Warp is not the thing that makes the least amount of sense. You're like, you know, the Time Warp was weird, but there were several other things that
there were a lot of things. And I can track like decision one through and the steps that took them to putting the time warp up. I just disagree with so many of those steps that like, but you like, know,
don't hate the player, hate the game.
Here we are.
Which totally absolutely makes sense in this context. Hey guys, welcome to Theology on the Rocks, where today we're doing the time warp. Why is it that our song? We'd have to pay for it.
We would have to pay for that, or we would have to play a very short,
the shortest version.
Like
now, we only have to play to pay Michael Morelli.
Yes, in our love,
in our love, and our drinks. We can get drinks.
Yep.
Luckily, he is Canadian, so he will accept.
Mm-hmm.
So we are drinking spritzes today, which, by the way, I have spritzers. I have no idea what that is, but I put wine in Seven Up. Is that sure. correct? Is that correct?
I think that as long as there are bubbles and it has some kind of wine, I think that it counts. I don't know that it's like a complicated. So yeah, you did good. I have a limoncello spritzer, so it's limoncello and prosecco. Oh,
yours is fancy.
Well, I have this bottle of limoncello that I was like, you know, it's hot as balls outside, and I was like, I need something happy, and for the hot as balls weather. So
Sprite is close to limoncello, guys. In case you didn't know.
It's almost the same thing.
It's truly the American version of limoncello.
But you know,
just take limoncello and make it tacky.
I have previously in my life multiple times put Sprite in white wine, to make it a spritzer. So
it's a very commonly ordered drink. I can attest in my bartending days. I used to just use the little handheld thing, and there you go.
Oh, there you go. Yeah.
Boom.
Yeah.
So today we are going to talk about, there are several things. Christy and I will talk about things separately, and then we'll be like, oh, we should talk about this on the podcast. One of them is hot tubs. The other, if you're... And the other was psych evaluations.
Psych evaluations.
And I promise you that both of those things came up as potential topics to discuss. Christy, inquiring minds want to know, how many times have you had a psych evaluation? Numerically, I'm ready.
Twice. Twice or three times? We're going to say 2.5. We're going to compromise on that and say 2.5. How many times have you had a psych evaluation?
I've had it 3 times.
Okay.
One for ordination.
Mm-hmm.
One for working at a children's hospital.
Yeah, that's fair.
And then one when I got arrested. One of these things is not like the other.
Well, if you have ever thought to yourselves, like, man, our theology aunties really need to see a therapist, know that we have.
We have. Thrice. I have gone thrice.
Yeah, so I had to do one at seminary. I also had to do one through work when I was working for a Christian ministry organization.
Oh.
And then I had...
Where was your half? Someone on the
street. This is where I'm like, I don't know if it technically counts, but it was at the doctor once. They made me do a psych eval, and they were like, it was just my annual checkup. And I was like, why is this happening? And they said, we do this with everyone. And I thought, surely that can't be true.
Oh, I guess I've had 4 because, yeah, they do that. They want to make sure you're all right.
It's the only time.
But I will say the questions at the annual are unfair. The question,
my favorite part of that question, that one, is when they were asking me if I was safe at home and they asked if I fall a lot. It is important. I'm supportive of all these. And you know what, if you want to put me through another psych eval, let's do it. I think that's probably a good thing to do to people.
The problem is if you study theology and they go like, how do you feel about your life right now? And you're like, oh,
terribly.
I have to really go deep.
But she asked if I fall a lot.
Oh, fall.
And I had I had just the day before fallen down the stairs and I was like, no, well, and she looked at me and I was like, I'm fine.
The other problem with these,
and then it got more intense after that comment. Yeah. She made me do more.
Right. I'm doing this book right now that's very not happy. And the guy was my doctor, Dr. Shepherd, which is such a great name for a doctor. Not to be confused with Matthew Shepherd, but he asked me, he said, how many times a week are you sad?
Yeah.
I swear on my life, I didn't hear him. So I said, a day? How many times a day am I sad? He goes, well, the question was week, but you can start with day if you want. And I was like, oh.
Well, because I would have that same question. Are we saying like each time I'm sad a week? Or is it like how many days of the week am I sad?
He gave me like one of those, like, you know, in the hospitals, there's like the happy to sad scale. He gave me that for like time. So it's like if a week is like, you have full time of a week, how much of that full time? Yeah. And there was this little like thing that you had to move. And I kept creeping towards the right. And I was like, he was like, that's taking up a lot. I said, I'm doing a really sad project right now.
Yeah.
And also the students are making me crazy. Yeah. But also I don't make enough money. And then he goes, and then I was like, but my life is nice. So, you know, you'll be happy to know, listeners, I was only about a little more than halfway.
How did your seminary psych eval go? What did they tell you?
Yeah. So I am ordained in the Disciples of Christ, DNOM, and I had to have that to be a part of it. They brought me in and gave me a lot of questioning. The one thing that I remember, I only remember one thing. I remember two things. One is that the psych guy was a guy. He was a very, very elderly man.
Okay.
And he asked me questions and he asked me about my mom. And he said, what's your relationship like with your mom? And I said, and I like stopped and he goes, oh, that really hit you hard. And I was like, well, no, I love my mom. I was like, I just need to think about how to express that to a stranger.
Yeah.
So I was trying to figure out the things like that, you know, I'm lucky that I do love my mom. We have a good relationship, but I was like trying to figure out what I should tell this stranger human about that said relationship.
Yeah.
And he took that as being like some telltale that I have like some sort of deep, dark secret to like my mom's in the basement or something. And I don't know, like, and I just remember being like, no, we're fine. He goes, you're being a little defensive. And I was like, well, because you brought up my mom.
Yeah. I mean, Lord.
So that's how that went. And that's all that I remember. The rest was just, I think, I mean, I am lucky in the sense that I don't think I have any like incredible mental health issues. Probably. I mean, I have anxiety for sure, but like nothing that's debilitating, which is a real great place to be. My students sometimes will say, oh, I don't have anything wrong with my brain. And I'm like, impossible. I don't believe it. So I think with those, I don't remember much because I don't think there was really much to tell. I do remember the jail one, but that's a different story.
When I was in seminary, we had to do the test first independently. And that test took fucking ever. It was the longest test I've ever.
Like a written test for your brain?
Like a multiple choice test, like. And it took hours.
Was it the Enneagram?
No, it wasn't. It was different. But like,
I just want that to be true.
Think if you took the Enneagram, but taking that test took 3 hours. Like,
it took me a while. It was
very intense. And after we did that, then we had to meet with somebody and they would go over your results and then talk to you and like go through this whole like assessment thing. And my favorite part of that is he was going through the list of stuff. And I mean, this man read me for filth, like, but like also was like very harsh. He was like, so you're very emotionally stable. which doesn't mean I'm emotionally stable. All it means is that I don't have like wild swings of emotions. Like I don't, you know, like I'm not like easily a crier or something. And he said, but you're also very,
she loves to hug people. So just when you see her, hug, give her a big old hug. She'll start crying right there.
For reasons. He said, but there was something else he said. And he goes, so you're not very good at loving people, are you? And I was like, oh my God.
That's sort of a similar thing. That was like, what's the issue? I was like, I don't know. You tell
me. And then he said that he said, you don't like schedules, which is true. And he said, he goes, you're not really suited for a job. I think that you should be a freelancer. And I was like, sir, that's very difficult. I don't want to freelance. Like,
no, I kind of am into it.
Like, can you find something easier for me to do? And he was like, no, because you'll rebel. As soon as you have an office job, you'll rebel. And I was like, and then I got an office job. And guess what?
Didn't go well.
That man was right. I did not do well.
We took one of those tests about what job you should have when I was in high school. And it was like Oregon Trail style on those old computers that printed out with like the little thing on the side that you can
pull off. So you would rip off. That was my
favorite. But I was having a particularly bad day when I took it. And they said, do you like working with others? Now, if anyone who knows me knows, I'm an incredible extrovert. But on this particular day, I was having a grunge day. And I decided that I, in fact, did not like working well with, or I didn't work well with others. And so I said no. And it printed out two jobs. Everybody else had these incredibly long job lists. I had two. One was a park ranger and one was a mortician. And I was like, wow. Okay, well, there you go.
That's amazing. Guys,
guess what? I became a mortician. Just kidding.
I knew a mortician once.
That's great.
Yeah.
You'll know another one at some
point. At some stage, he is going to become a mortician, guys. New career path.
You missed my step. I said, at some point, you'll know another one. And then I went, wow, that's dooming. That's why he had me get on the scale.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think. We were having this discussion. I appreciate that the denomination, I mean, they spent the money to do it. I didn't pay for it, you know, but that they were, that they did that. I think that's important. Like if you're going to have people, and that the hospital did it as well. Yeah. I think the jail was trying to make sure I wouldn't like shank someone, which is also fair.
If we're that is also fair.
Speaking in a utilitarian way. I'm happy that they really evaluated that.
Yeah.
But so I do think that those safeguards, safeguards are good, but I also think that, some of them are slightly, antiquated and kind of arbitrary. I think.
I do think that like, it's going to be more than a singular evaluation that would really like get it because, you know, I feel like there are a lot of people who have become various professions, pastors or chaplains or like doctors or whatever, who have no business being that thing. Mm-hmm. And obviously like they snuck through whatever psych eval happened.
Well, I mean, I don't think it's hard I think it's, if you're a clever enough or manipulative enough person, certainly cheat on those. It's not,
I appreciate the sentiment or like at least there's some effort behind like, let's not put a serial killer in a priest or whatever. But at some stage, like obviously they're not doing a great job.
Well, but the issue with psychopaths is that they're very aware of these things. So they know,
it does seem like we need to come up with a new way of,
I'm sure AI maybe will fix it.
Oh yeah. That's what happens with AI.
AI decided that the Atlanta Falcons had the best logo in the NFL. Would you like to know where the Broncos came in? Of course you do. Well, second to last.
It was out of 15 teams and there's 32.
Oh, sorry. Middle.
But also, I don't trust it. Mm. I don't trust it.
I only trust that one.
Let's talk about hot tubs now.
Okay, we're trying to move away from that. Can we please convince Christy that orange is not the best color? Okay, anyway, moving on.
Never will. I love it. I'm wearing orange right now.
Correct.
Correct. See, look, orange.
Mm, it's lovely. Not at all what people wear so that you don't hit them with cars on the road. So
I mean, it's a good benefit for sure.
Yeah. Oh my god, like
a lot of my wardrobe being orange.
The Broncos are so egalitarian.
We're so safe. We're so safe.
So hot tubs. Yay or nay?
Yay! I love hot tubs.
I freaking love hot tubs.
I freaking love it. My family are hot. We're hot tub people.
We're hot.
I grew up with a hot tub. Most of my family, we've owned hot tubs. Like
fancy.
Yep.
This is like the second time I think I've said fancy.
Fancy.
Mm-hmm.
We're hot tub people and I love them. And if I could have a hot tub right now, I absolutely would. But it's hard to have that when you're renting. So
you live in Florida.
But you should have I'd still go in it. You should have a hot tub. Let's put one in your backyard.
At what stage do you quit asking for things? I've asked now for
Stuart. We need a hot tub.
Stuart, we need a hot tub. I heard him shuffling around in there.
He's like, oh god, it's happening again.
Here I'm coming. Hey.
Hey.
So we are recording. So we need a hot tub.
We need a hot tub. And by we, I mean you guys that I will use when I'm there.
Okay.
That's fine. That's happening. Fine. It's happening.
At some stage.
You heard it here. Zero. You heard it here.
Zero.
Okay. Bye. Rude.
We're getting a hot tub, guys.
He said he'll circle back when my credit card's at zero, which was rude. Also true. But that's what it is. Eventually your husband starts talking to you like your dad used to, and you're like, I want a puppy, and he'd be like, okay. And that's sort of
where, of it.
Yeah, right. That's sort of where he just did. He was just like, okay. And that's sort of the response I'm getting.
Yeah.
So yeah, no, I would love a hot tub. The best hot tub experience I had, because I'm sure you're dying to know, is that I was in a hot tub in Michigan with certain people that you probably know. And it was very cold. It was snowing.
I know who she's talking about. She's not going to say his name, but I know. And guys, it's a good one.
It's a good one.
Yeah.
A good one. But it was snowing, which I feel like is the perfect scenario for hot tubs. And I say that as one who despises snow, but it would probably be the one exception I would have is if the bottom half of
it is fantastic.
Warm. So we would run from the house to the hot tub and do the hot tub, and then you'd run back out. Getting out was the worst. At one stage I think I just was like, I will sleep
in the hot tub
as opposed to
do you want to know what we used to do in Colorado whenever snow? We would be in the hot tub, and then I never did this because I'm not insane, but people would jump into the snow, like full body in the snow, and then get back into the hot tub.
I'm pretty certain
that's how you die.
I think that's what causes you to go into shock. But also, yeah. I think this is why when Christy was talking about back in the far past, thank God, about those winter sports, I'm like, these people are purposely, it's one thing to push your body, but it's another thing to torture yourself and then push your body. And to me, snow and ice is just another level.
Okay. I understand that. I mean,
Okay. In the way that she was like I was a student. She said, okay, but I'm going to tell you why you're wrong.
But well, no. So I don't like snow. It is not my favorite thing. I love the Winter Olympics and I love snow sports to watch, but I don't participate in them. Because it's too cold. It's too cold. And I will go ice skating. I'm good at ice skating. I like ice skating, but that is where I draw the line. And I skied for a very long time. So this isn't like out of lack of attempts, but
humble brag.
Chris
grew up fancy, if y'all haven't. We had a hot tub and I just would go skiing when I was younger.
We were
life was really hard at my private school that I went to. Oh my God.
This is a very quick aside, but my best friend from high school was here last weekend and we were going through our yearbooks. And at one stage we started laughing and we were like, we went to such an absurd school.
I mean,
I showed her. I mean, she's seen it. She owns it. But like,
well, no, I mean, the people who are listening, we've shown
the people. We've put it up. But we were just cracking up. But I have all of them here, and so we were looking through. We were also looking through. You know, when you're your senior, you get to put like your favorite quote or whatever. Mm-hmm. And ours, it was, you could do thanks, and you could do favorite things, and you could do favorite quote, but you could also do favorite Bible verse.
Oh God!
And what so, like, everybody has a favorite Bible verse in there. Almost everybody, not everybody, everybody, but like a lot of us. And she was like, "Do you even remember which one this is?" I was like, "Yes."
What was your favorite Bible verse?
Romans 8:28, which is
what the heck is that?
It's I know the plans that I have for you or something.
Oh.
I used to have this one memorized, but it's
okay if you don't know it. I didn't even know what it was. So we had a very
similar thing, but you could just say what you hope to do. And I was trying to find it, but I wrote again, really going through it, I think in high school more than you might think by my Britney Spears outfit. I want to move to Montana, or I want to go to UGA, and then I want to move to by myself to Montana in a cabin.
You wanted to live in a cabin.
Montana. Very specific.
I'm looking it up. Hold on.
No, I need you to pay attention to what I'm saying right now.
I was wrong. We know that in all things, God works for the good of those who love him. That's it. That was my favorite.
I'm so glad that you figured that out.
Sorry, it was going to bother me. Ronnelly and I both have a reference to something that neither of us remembers. We both have room 303 in ours. I don't know what that means.
You have a party in a hotel room? I don't feel
like that. Know what that means. I do. It has to reference a hotel room. We've narrowed it down to a hotel room. What hotel room and why we are thinking it is lost.
Maybe you watched a movie. With the 303?
I have no idea.
Well, I mean, but I don't think you were at a...
We were in a lot of hotels.
Right, but were they that memorable?
apparently not, but we sure thought they were. Because both of us have in our things room 303. We are hoping that our former high school classmates think that we're in a cult, though.
Mm. Well, they do probably based on this podcast. I would certainly say so. So, listeners, today we thought that other than hot tubs, which we decided are good,
and psyche valves,
which we think are good, but also don't really work on psychopaths.
Yeah.
Glad we sorted that out. we have an announcement.
Oh, we do.
We do. We do. Our announcement. Well, we have a couple announcements, actually. One is that summer's coming up. Leah has a book due. And so we may be taking a little bit of a break. We certainly are from book group. But once fall hits, we'll be right back in the thick of things again.
We will. Yeah. Now we're going to put a little pause on the book club. Just so that Leah can finish up, because reading banned books and writing about conversion therapy is making for really bad mental health.
I'm tail is creeping towards the right.
Her tail is creeping ever so quickly. Ever so
slightly to the right. I was like, I'm going to the beach, though.
This jump time. To the right.
Jump to the right. It's just a jump to the right. A jump to the left? No. Nope. It, just
jump nope, to the right. Jump to the right.
And then nope. Our other announcement is that Christy and I have now confirmed that we are going to
Theology Beer Camp.
Theology Beer Camp.
Yes.
We already have a, we're not saying who it is.
Oh, yeah. We're not saying who it is, but we have.
We have a stellar Hot Ones.
This is.
Top tier.
Top tier. Hop. I am so excited.
It's, can we I've say never... it's not Cornell West. So let's go ahead and set those expectations right there.
It's not Cornell West.
he might show up. I don't know.
He might show up right? Maybe he'll ask to be part of it.
If he wants to be.
That's not who the planned guest
that's
is.
That's not who the planned guest is.
The planned guest is amazing. And Leah and I are over the moon about it. So
yeah. Hopefully they don't end up on the floor of a children's ministry room like Will Rose. Just flat out.
Just like, ooh, yeah, he can't do Hot Ones.
I'm usually pretty bad at organizing anything, but I have reached out to a couple of the podcasts, one of which is the Bible Divas. To see if they want to do a crossover, which would be amazing. Mm-hmm. Because I know Dr. Jennifer Shaw from Campbell. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I currently work with Dr. Angela Parker, who's at Mercer as well. So that's two out of the Bible Divas. So mm-hmm. that would be a very fun, and that's a good group. And so we could... Yeah. We'll have so much feminine energy.
Oh my God, so much. It's going to be amazing. So yeah, hopefully.
Much needed feminine
energy. Much needed feminine energy. Mm-hmm. It's going to be the beer camp for the girls.
Brennan and Bren, who is an organizer of the volunteers and also a dear friend, talked about this last year, which is that we really need to stage kind of a coup.
Yeah.
And...
That's what I'm planning this year.
We're working on.
We're gonna take over.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But we don't.
All right, boys. Your time is over.
So this is not to say if you're listening that you can't join said coup if you are not you don't identify as female. You certainly can. However, just know that you were advocating for the takeover.
Yes. You want to overthrow the patriarchy, but yeah. You are not a feminine identifying person.
That's
okay. You're still welcome. You can Absolutely. Still take over the patriarchy with us.
Right. We may Happily. Need you to fix our trunk or, you know.
Phil is definitely welcome.
Phil is welcome. I feel like because he'll, even if Bren wasn't a part of it, I feel like Phil would still be a part of it.
I feel like he would too.
He would be like, I'll hang with y'all.
Be like, yeah. I feel this about Ryan Doe's as well. Ryan
will certainly be there. I think
Michael Morelli will definitely be there. Yeah. So we've got a good, but Bryant, like, again, they don't get to be in charge.
Marvin and Bryant will definitely be with
mm-hmm.
us.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yep. I see them coming.
I can't think that Josh Patterson will though. I don't think we got him.
Josh Patterson is far too into,
trip and
beating men. Us with wrestling things and
the trip and men, which sounded really, really not straight, which is not what I was going for there. Josh, we affirm that you can love whoever you want to love, but you do seem to I can't imagine you overthrowing your BFF.
We gotta we're a little suspicious of you, Josh. The beef between Theology on the Rocks and Joshua Patterson continues. You know, it's because they stole our belt.
They stole our belt.
They stole our belt. It's not in our possession.
We are, as if you watch the video, we are the reigning mm-hmm. God Bless champion, whether we have the belt or not.
Right. The title stays with us.
The bigger the belt, the smaller the win. Is what I'm going to say. That's all I'm saying.
But we're very excited to be. No, we are.
It's in Kansas City, which I know nothing about other than Taylor Swift's fiance is from there. So we'll see how it goes. It was my first question. I said, is Travis Kelce going to be there? And Josh Patterson responded and said, no.
I was like, was he like, maybe?
He said something about...
probably not during that football.
There was some sort of connection, and I went, so no. So you're saying no.
You're saying no, it's not going to happen.
I'm going to get a hot tub quicker than Travis Kelce's going to be in Kansas City.
We're excited. I mean, I don't want to go to Kansas City, but it's a testament to my love for beer camp and everybody else.
You live there, but it's...
Jed is coming from Church and Other Jugs, so the whole of Emojellicals will be there, which we're really excited about. And also, Jed is leading the AA group.
That's cool. Yeah.
So we're excited about that.
There's several people that have messaged me since we've confirmed, including a certain influencer who said that if I'm going, that he's not going.
Yeah, well,
and I said
he's not going to overthrow the patriarchy with us either.
Oh, he certainly is not. he is the patriarchy.
We're throwing down gloves left and right this episode.
We truly are. If anyone listens, they're going to be like, whoa, look, guys, Theology on the Rocks, we got to make our own way here.
We've got to fight the fight. We've been doing it for a while now.
You can come with us. Yeah. You're in there. Sarah Heath, come on. Get on board. Get in my Oregon Trail wagon. We're going.
We're going to do this.
Come on, B. We're going shopping. except instead of shopping, we're going to go overthrow the patriarchy. But yeah, no, it'll be fun. We're excited. And we're excited to see you all too. And we do recognize that this was the place where Theology on the Rocks really was born, I think, in a way. It was born from Christy's brain and Drunk History, but this is a place that it was highlighted and was able to flourish. And so that's
my desire to recreate Drunk History would have gotten us through like a 4-month stint of doing this podcast, and then it would have died out. So really, the continued existence of Theology on the Rocks is entirely because of Beer Camp and everyone we've met.
Build on Beer Camp and
so like
taking
down, we're gonna overthrow Trip and the patriarchy, but we also do love them in our own way.
Yeah, and we did challenge Trip on the podcast Instagram. By the way, Trip is not the special.
He's not the special one.
And
he gave a firm
dad maybe.
His reasoning makes sense to me, so I'm letting him off the hook for that. However, we are going to make him do it at some stage.
I don't think I heard the reasoning. It doesn't have to necessarily be public consumption, but you can.
It's mostly because he's seen what's happened to both Ryan Doe's and Tom Herman's Webster, and he's like, I have to lead Beer Camp. And I'm like, that's fair.
Hey, welcome to being a woman. You know what it's like to have to like, oh, I don't know, like take some, this is just a hypothetical.
You're gonna have the man cold after it, you know?
No, have to like lead a whole group of college kids to Northern Ireland while you actively bleed.
He's not worked up. He's not been trained for that nonsense. They're weak little men. It's fine.
Oh my God. I don't want to get sick to my stomach.
Ryan Rose was in a kind of real bad, real bad way after, though.
I was in a
real bad way. I mean, none of us are doing well.
We were not doing well. This last one got me. This was a rough one.
Bad. We're gonna up the quality, though, for this, because our special guest, we don't want to disappoint them or make them eat microwaved veggie nuggets. So it's going to be better this year. We're excited.
And we're in Kansas City. So like, if we can't get wings, I don't know what we're left with at that stage. But also send in questions.
Yeah.
Last year we had quite a few funny questions, but we need some theology questions, y'all.
And like, don't let us down. Don't embarrass us in front of our friend.
You sound like Stuart now. Don't embarrass us in front of our friend.
Don't embarrass us in front of our friend. It's going to be so good. We're very excited about it. Mm.
All right. So topic at hand tonight. Things we, well, I'll let you describe because you sent it to me in a, like a polo.
Rambly polo.
So I'm going to let you summarize.
Because I did such a good job of it.
I agreed in my brain. I don't think I told you I agreed.
But. You didn't. No, you didn't. It's okay. Okay. So it was, I thought that it would be nice for us to chat a little bit about like significant things that we learned that we were surprised about, or that like were coming from a place that we didn't necessarily expect in our like theological education, not just in life. Like I learned a lot about not jumping into snow and hot tubs, but that's not where we're going. So
we've already covered that.
We've already talked about that.
We've already covered that when you go to jail, you get a psych eval.
Yeah.
we've moved past that.
Okay? We've moved past that. Yeah. So, yeah. So like what are, you know, just kind of a thing that you learned that you feel was important that isn't necessarily like, this is the whole thing I studied, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think if you want me to go, I can go.
Yeah, you go.
Because I did think about this. It was a great question because I had to ponder it. I think the thing that I discovered both through my master's, interestingly, my MDiv, and also my PhD was this idea of constructive theology. Mm-hmm. And I will tell you why I think it's important.
Okay.
Because I lived in a world where you didn't construct theology. You know, theology was rigid. Theology. Yeah. Yeah, that was it. You know, I grew up Southern Baptist, and no one was constructing anything. Like there was one, and again, I'm saying this in heavy quotations, there was one theological understanding that was the truth. Mm-hmm. And that's what you bought into and believed. And there wasn't any deviate. And if you deviated, it was suspicious, you know?
Yes.
So then when I went to seminary and I started learning about all this theology stuff, people always talk about deconstruction, reconstruction. It's very in vogue. But I think for me, it wasn't like I went to seminary and all of a sudden I was like, oh my gosh, you know, you still hold on to stuff. I think mine was sort of a slow burn. And when I started learning about other religions, especially, which we didn't do that, other religions just needed to be converted to Christianity. And also I grew up in Georgia, so there wasn't really a whole bunch of diversity there. Yeah. But yeah, so this idea of learning about other religions and how they understood their own traditions and also in interfaith scenarios and how they constructed those interactions that were not conversion interactions. So I did my master's dissertation on the Velankani Festival, which is an interfaith festival between Christians and Hindus in India. And it's amazing. It was amazing when I studied it. I don't want to claim it now, but you know, they dress the Virgin Mary up in like the Hindu garb
and all that stuff. Yeah. So
it's quite a fun sort of, I wouldn't say performative, but embodied way of doing this sort of interface stuff. And no one's trying to convince anybody either way. It's just a celebration, basically.
Yep.
And I think for me, that was a real game changer. Mm-hmm. The way that they constructed that. And then of course, when I went and did my theological studies at a PhD level, you know, I went to Northern Ireland and looked at Catholics and Protestants. And of course, growing up Southern Baptist, Catholics were seen as being a big other as well, even within the tradition. Mm-hmm. And sometimes not even within the tradition.
Yeah.
They were separate. And so, and also how they constructed their theology, based on a lot of the stuff that was happening in their social life, like in terms of what they wanted or their desires. And so that really took a turn for me that you could kind of see how people could use the idea of constructing theology, mm-hmm. In both a negative and a positive way. But that in both scenarios, it was based incredibly upon one's own personal bias, belief, desires, etc. And taking that information with me and bringing it back here, I'm like, oh, we're all just out here doing this version. And mm-hmm. I grew up in a certain version.
Yeah.
There's no definitive version, even if people say it is. And so to me, that was the biggest thing that I took away from my studies is this idea that we, like having to say, we construct theology.
Yep.
Theology is not a given. It is a construction.
Yeah.
And so for me, that was the biggest thing. What about you?
Well, like, I'm not at all shocked to say that it is almost exactly the same thing.
I was waiting to see if it was.
I was like,
we didn't talk about it beforehand, so we didn't.
We did not. No, I mean, she didn't even tell me that she was agreeing to this question. So,
100%. Like, how, so just 2 seconds ago,
we did not like this was not planned.
Yeah.
Very similarly, when I grew up, it wasn't so much that I wasn't allowed to ask questions, but that there was always a answer. Or like the assumption that knowledge was something that we could universally have specific truths about, right? Everybody who is a correct Christian is going to answer these specific questions exactly the same, regardless of like location or time period or anything like that. And so there was just the one theology for me too, you know. It was very similar, kind of like, it's just the simple. And there were things that were really like weird and hard for me to like pull my head around, like how can this be true or whatever, but there weren't options. And so I just would kind of like, okay, I guess so. And then I took a global theology class when I was in seminary, and we studied, it was global Christian theology, Christian seminary. So, but we learned about how Christianity is developed and the specific doctrinal differences and practices and things like that from different areas of the world. And there was an intense focus in my class on the majority world, and in part because my professor was Haitian. And so he was really like coming from a lot of personal experience, but also he was like, the majority of Christians now live in Africa and Asia. And so we need to be prioritizing the theology that's coming out of there currently, you know? And so we read books like Water Buffalo Theology, which is from Japan. And we read, there's a book called Emancipation Still Coming by Courtright Davis, which is Caribbean theology. And we learned a lot about the like many different kinds of Christian practice in Africa. And I remember thinking one day, oh my God, so many things that I thought were my Christian beliefs are just my American beliefs. And like connecting some dots to why I had a specific assumption about something and realizing how limited I was in what I really understood about all of it. And then when I did my PhD, I was doing Caribbean theology kind of as part of my studies. But one of the girls who, her supervisor was David Jasper. And so we would interact regularly. And she was doing her dissertation on studying the ways that when the missionaries went to Africa in the 1800s, they started tearing down African buildings and building European churches and saying that they couldn't worship Jesus in the African building. They had to worship in the European building, even though they were in places that have had Christianity for longer, you know, like Ghana, Ethiopia and stuff. And so she was doing this whole project on essentially the like architecture of like the architectural colonization of the missionaries, you know. And it was so fascinating to hear, and like kind of all of a sudden it was just like things click, you know, like all of a sudden it's like, oh my God, I think these things because of my own bias, And I remember too having a conversation with my dad about it once, and he was like, yeah, but what do you do? Like, I can't not be biased. And I was like, no, nobody's asking you to not be biased. But what we're saying is, like, you have to know what your bias is so that you can say, like, okay, this, the reason I lean towards this understanding is because of my, like, foundational education in Greek philosophy, and not because that was inherently what was going on, especially like for ancient Christians in the earliest church, you know, like.
Yeah. I mean, I wrote a book called Bad Theology, which students point out a lot. They're like, you're just kind of being this thing. And I'm like, yeah, but I know that I'm being it. And I write that specific line.
Yeah.
The difference is I know I'm doing it.
Yeah. And like, there's a really important thing that happens when you realize, like, you can't stop being biased, but you can be aware of it.
Yep.
And then you can better assess, like, do I believe this because it is logical, rational, or like most supported by scripture or what have you? Or do I believe this because the Industrial Revolution made me prioritize science? Like, you know, like,
I think about that often. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, what kinds of things would we be doing differently if we were allowed to incorporate indigenous practices in, you know, which is something that happens in most of the world, is this kind of combination of the traditions.
Yeah.
You know, and like, why? It's just, I think it's just so fascinating. So like, I remember one time having a conversation with somebody and he was like, well, I mean, like, obviously you don't believe in ghosts. And I was like, I mean, maybe I do. I was like, I'm not trying to say I do or I don't, but I was like, the thing about it is that, like,
there are a lot of horror films. Right?
I was like, there are a lot of, cause we were having a very in-depth conversation. This was not like just the kind of, I said, there are a lot of cultures who have very robust belief in what we call ghosts and like ancestors and supernatural and stuff. And I'm not going to be like, oh, but I know science, so I know that's not real. You know, like, I'm not going to do that anymore.
We're both describing as sort of this abandoning of the exclusivist claim on truth.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And I think that's quite right. And I think what your dad was saying gets brought up a lot when I'm talking about, or I'm doing stuff about the book, is that, well, if you give up that exclusivist claim, how do you claim anything? And it's, my argument to that is, well, you just did it talking about ghosts. Like, you know, we actually live in a world that's fairly vague. Like, you know, you say this is the Enlightenment stuff that's making our Industrial Revolution. And that's fine. I believe in science. Like, I'll
take love it. Big fan. Thank you.
And I think, you know, genocide's bad. And like,
there
are, I think there are these things, but then there's some stuff that we don't necessarily know. And I think that that's, you know, I think people want to have this scientific paradigm for everything. And I think that, and actually it's quite a popular paradigm. I was transcribing an interview today, and I hope I get to use this information, but I will say the person who was talking basically was referring to this idea of how successful some of these churches are that are very conservative because they offer a sense of certainty.
Yes.
And that, you know, people desire that.
Yes.
Especially when we're talking about the fear of the afterlife, you know, which is a big fear for people. So it's like, I get the draw.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, I think that seems to be what we both have.
I think that, I think that there's a desire for certainty and a desire that we can nail down what truth is and say, what is a fork, to call back to many years ago. But like,
we still haven't made those t-shirts, Christy, yet. We are missing a fork. We're missing a track.
To get our fork t-shirts. This is, I'm on it. but like, we're so, especially I think for those of us who are in academia or who are really prioritizing like what can I know about theology or about God or what have you. There's such a desire to be able to be certain about something and to be right about it. And a lot of times it leaves out any acknowledgement that our own, like where we land on a topic is influenced by so many things that like it's nearly impossible for us to say, this is certainly not, this is a universal thing. This is not just because of my bias, you know, like, and to be open to say, I don't know. And not only do I not know, but to say, I'm going to assume that I'm probably wrong more often than not, you know?
And, yeah. Oh yeah.
And like,
I think, especially as women, I have to gender it. We lean towards that.
Yeah. Well, and I think, yeah, I mean, 100%, I think you and I are like, well, yeah, of course, because we've been trained to be comfortable with the idea of being wrong all the time or that we are wrong all the time, but also to be like, that's actually okay.
Yeah.
I mean,
Josh, our friend, Josh Patterson was taking the piss out of the fact that I had a master's of divinity, which is a ridiculous name for a degree. But I was of course pushing back because I'm myself as a human.
Yep.
But I do think it's funny because I was saying, you know, a master's of arts to me is way crazier to think about. I'm a master of art. At least I have like a little bit of the elephant in terms of divinity, or, you know, divinity's theology, whatever. But art.
Art. All of the art. Yeah, I have mastered all of the art.
I can play the Time Warp on my guitar now. It just, when I got the degree, I immediately conferred.
Yes.
One,
I am a concert pianist. I can play beautiful things.
It is a ridiculous name, but I have now conquered all of divinity. I know everything, including that ghost question.
Mm-hmm.
You should have got an MDiv and you would know the answer to that.
Then I would know the answer.
Saz, it's only for us. It's only for us. Gotta go another year and anything.
Damn it. That.
And then the Masters of Arts. Yeah. I mean, I'm now a classically trained painter.
Right.
Upon receiving that degree.
It is ridiculous, but you know, it's, I mean, and this is something that maybe someday we'll talk about also, but like, I think because my academic career has been 100% in the humanities, I am very comfortable living without answers, you know, like when I was in my English program, for undergrad, I had this professor who is the most brilliant man. I love him. His name is Michael Cramp. He teaches lit at Lehigh University right now. And he has a podcast that I'm going to shout out on Jane Eyre and the Humanities. Not Jane Eyre, Jane Austen. Sorry. Jane Austen and the Humanities. And
it's a while after that, but I just was like, I didn't know upon reflection. It's not the subject, it's how specific it is.
It's super specific. It's Jane Austen.
What if we were like Karl Barth on the Rock?
Carl Bart on the Rocks. That's her new name. Jane Austen and the Humanities. And he travels the world interviewing people about Jane Austen and stuff. And like, it's really interesting. But he would give us these exams and they were multiple choice, but it was, he said, all of the answers are correct. You have to figure out which is the most correct.
Oh my God.
And it was super hard and awful.
I don't know that I
hated that a lot. And
can you imagine doing that in
today's class? Absolutely not.
Even the class I was speaking about before.
No, absolutely not. I tell my students about it sometimes. I'm like, just in case you ever get mad at me. That was one of my professors.
Yeah.
But he kind of helped me understand in a lot of ways how like there's just like the amount of different answers we can have to a question that can all be right. Or like my other professor would say that, you know, stories can be about a lot of things. There are some answers that are wrong. Like he, and this was his example he always used, The Little Mermaid is not about aliens. It is about a lot of things.
You've
about,
used this right? before, and I yeah. said, well, what if...
I know, but like this, but he was like, there are some things that are wrong. So like, I can say, yeah, there are things that I don't, I feel very confident in saying are wrong. Genocide is wrong.
Not great.
Super, you know, I can plant my flag right in there. Nazis,
not a fan. Not a fan of mass death. No.
But like, I feel like that's such a better place to be, is to say I can live in more mystery than maybe some people are comfortable with. And I feel like that makes me, I mean, a better person, you know, generally than most people. I'm just kidding. Very humble.
I thought you were going to just period that.
I was going to period that. I was trying really hard to get through it without laughing.
In case you wonder if I am really listening to Christy, my face, rewind the tape.
She's like, what is happening? No. I mean, but it's good. I think it's good to.
Yeah.
So, but no, like I said, I'm 0% surprised that we are describing the same thing that we learned.
It's so strange that. It's
so weird. You know, I mean, just.
Like your replacement, Leah.
All these years later.
JK, JK. Well, guys, I think that is that was our thing we wanted to talk about.
Leave you
but
that.
I think that
I love if you think ghosts are real.
If you're doing your own degree, think about the things. It may be hard right now because you're in the midst of it, but maybe upon reflection you can kind of look and see what you know you think that you're getting out of some of the stuff that you're getting.
Yeah.
And if you reflect back and you're like, nah, I don't get anything, then, you know.
I think a lot of times the best things that you learn come out of nowhere, where you're like, I didn't expect this to be the class that I revisit for the next 20 years or whatever. But
yeah, like I had a professor in seminary, Tom Slater, whose expertise is Revelation. I had one class that I needed to take that was an elective, and I really love Dr. Slater, but I don't care about biblical studies in the sense outside of a ministerial sense,
yeah,
in an academic way. But I took this class, and there are still things I learned in that class that I bring up to this day, because apparently people love to still talk about Revelation all the time, especially in bad theology. But it was one of those things where it's like, if you have, you know, and tell your professors.
Yeah.
If you're.
We need encouragement more often than you think.
Tell like, them. Like, really shout regularly. Them out.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, give them an email and say, you know, this, because you never know if that email might keep them going another semester and or another year to help mm-hmm. other people who could really benefit from that. Cause we are, I mean, this is not beginning out. So it's like a money soapbox, but we're losing teachers at a rapid rate.
We really are.
And
it's for many reasons, but one of them is just the depression.
Yeah. But also, I mean, yeah, well, yes, but also the consumerization. I'm going to put that one out.
I stand by that. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Of education and of knowledge, yeah. and how you know just imagine that professor in 2026 being like, I need you to pick the most right answer. Like, it would be,
I mean, he, again, like,
he might still do, but
that's, he might still do, but
that's because he's tenured now.
I'm sure he is. Yeah. The thing is that I look back on my education and I am so grateful for the things that I thought in the moment were hard,
mm-hmm.
and like the things that I was like, how dare, you know, this is too hard or whatever, like, but thank God.
Yeah.
Thank God my professors and my high school teachers and my, you know, whoever were willing to push us and were like, no, you're not gonna just get an A for existing, you know. And yeah. I mean, I certainly do my very best not to do that now, but like, it can be difficult when there's that consumerization of education. It's not good for anxiety, guys.
I thought my professors were like the most, especially the male professors, because I, okay, you can give me a psych eval for that. But I had a professor in undergrad, Rob Nash, shout him out. I've shouted him out before. But he took me to China. I was looking the other day, there's a picture of us on the Great Wall, and it's very, very sweet. And then we now teach together. We have a class that we taught together last year, and he got emotional while he was teaching it. And it was interesting because I was like, oh, he's getting, and I didn't know what to do because he was such a hero in my mind. Yeah. And he is a hero in my mind. But I realized that, like, I took his love of a thing, and then I made it my love. And like, yep. It's not that
he didn't, you're the legacy, like you're his legacy. And that's,
but yeah. It wasn't just a legacy of like a lot of some, or well, I won't say a lot of, but some male academics like want you to, that I've worked with, want you to do exactly what they did and carry on their work so that they live on. Whenever I'm talking about this sort of legacy, it's more, I took the passion, because we don't do the same things. Like, he's more of a global Christianity person. I do more theology. Yeah. Like, we do different things, but he could see that the passion he instilled at that age still carries on now. Yep. And I think that there's a pride there. And I think that that's kind of a healthy pride. And so just know that your professors feel that.
Yeah.
You know, we don't need you to go be theologians, but.
No, but like, it makes me, I mean, the joy I get when I know that like something, anything, literally it can be. I mean, I've been told a number of things that like a student has been like, you said this one day and it really impacted me. And I'm like, oh, okay. Like the grading is worth it. You know, like,
And you can tell real teachers, cause we get so excited. Like my doctorate students had to read my book last week, and we sat around, and at the end, of course, they're polite. They're not going to be like, you know, let's just have just them on Zoom, like setting fire to it or anything. But like, there was a couple that said at the end, like, you know, we actually really did enjoy this, and we're going to use it in our churches because we think it'll be helpful. It was the COVID book, which is more accessible, I would say. And I just was like, thank you. Like, I was like,
well, great though. I love that.
It is so great. And I said, you know, there, I don't think there's a bigger compliment for a practical theologian to get than
like,
I'm going to go use this somewhere.
Yeah, I'm going to use this. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, people often ask like, why practical theology? Why not philosophical and systematic? Cause they get so much more props for being so much more clever. And I'm like, because I want people to do something with it.
I also want to point out that both of us said that the thing that we learned the most was essentially practical theology. Like, how is theology affected by real lives? So, you know.
And on that, kids, we conclude. Mic drop.
Because earlier when I was trying to come up with the answer, I was like, damn it. This is practical theology. And Leah's going to be like, ha, ha, ha.
I thought it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But it's okay because it is.
It is okay. I mean,
it, like,
it may be what saves us in the end.
Probably.
Or not. Because practical theology can be bad too. So
It can be bad too. But like,
either way.
I think often of the theologians that fought Hitler. Like, really, like, trying to be like, this is, you know, and I'm like, it's important for us to be able to speak to the context of the times. So
I'm converting her, guys. I don't have to convert you, but
that happened in Dr. Noli's class. The year 20 something, I won't say.
Well, on that note, guys, thank you
so
much for being with us.
Yeah.
All become practical theologians, but wait like 5 to 6 years. I've gotta get my retirement in. You can do it.
I said come to beer camp.
Yeah, come to beer camp. I think there's a I know the geeks, the systematic ecology folks had a code, and we'll try to find it because I don't think it's like a specific code for podcasts this time.
But I am remembering right at this moment is that early bird tickets end soon.
Okay.
So if you are listening in the month of April and you've not yet gotten your tickets, do it now because I think those prices go up at the end of the month. We should check that before just speaking it onto the internet, but
we should check it. But also we may just
not have this podcast rolls. So
that's not how it rolls. But here's the deal. Also, maybe we'll just put it up on the Instagram stories and then take the stories as those are vetted.
The stories are always vetted and or memes that are not.
That's when Christy and I post the same thing. She sent me a message and she goes, it looks like we have memory problems.
If you're ever wondering, like, hey,
it's because there's two
Theology on the Rocks posted the same thing twice. It's because Leah and I have independently posted it and not talked to each other about it. And we don't take it down. We don't edit.
No. Well, because you know that apparently you need it. Both of us felt it was important. So you need to know
it. God has laid it on both of our hearts. So we're both doing it.
God laid it on both our hearts. You get it laid on your heart twice.
Look, as anyone who has ever DM'd us and then had to spend time trying to figure out who it is.
I have looked at our messages and there are so many times I'm like, I wonder if they know
who it is. Now and then you can see that they're like, I know who, you know, I'm calling this person out.
But there's like grammatical errors, it's probably mine. Or just entire words missing. Probably. If it looks like you're having to do a Mad Lib.
If somebody looks drunk, it's because Leah didn't put her glasses on. Is what's
happening. Yeah. If a word is spelled wildly outrageous, it's probably also me. All right. Okay. Bye, y'all.
Bye. Wait. I have to figure out how to end it again.
Oh, no. Hey, bye.